Well, I can't resist. If you were listening to BBC News just before this, their tag story was the French President Nicolas Sarkozy was disturbed because he thought that his reputation was being besmirched. And you'll notice that our president doesn't worry about that at all. It's beyond being besmirched. Well, folks, it's election time again, and to paraphrase Yogi Berra, it's deja vu all over again. This is from the Brad Friedman blog, Brad Blog. ES&S touchscreen votes now flipping in Texas, too. Obama and the Democratic National Committee attorney still AWOL. State after state, ES&S, iVotronics are flipping Democratic votes to Republican. What you can do about it, and where the hell are those thousands of Obama DNC attorneys? This is just getting worse and worse. Now it's happening in Texas and in Missouri, if you read the end of this article. And the vaunted thousands of attorneys from the Obama campaign and the Democratic National Committee are still nowhere to be found. With every incident so far reported of touchscreen vote flipping during early voting in this year's general election, from county to county in West Virginia and in Nashville, Tennessee, it's been the ES&S iVotronic touchscreen machines that has failed, flipping votes from one candidate to another not chosen by the voter. In every instance, see update below, it's been attempted Democratic vote flipped to the Republican or another party. These are the same machines that lost 18,000 votes in Democratic-leaning Sarasota County in the 2006 U.S. House race for Kathleen Harris's old seat. The Democrat, Christine Jennings, was declared the loser by over Republican Vern Buchanan, whose own wife had trouble voting for him that day, by just 369 votes. Several academic studies and even the General Accounting Office have been unable to rule out either tampering or hardware-software error for the disappeared 18,000 votes. Okay, 18,000 votes disappeared. The Republican won by 369 votes. As we wrote earlier this week, after there was finally one report of vote flipping from Democrat to Republican in Tennessee, a very rare instance, by the way, these machines need to be taken out of service now, impounded and quarantined immediately, and every vote needs to be given a paper ballot where these machines are currently being used. Voters who have such problems need to inform other voters waiting in line which machine should not be used, and we offer other tips below as well. Update. The rare vote flip from Republican to Democrat now seems to have been a hoax carried out by local Republicans, according to a Tennessee election integrity activist who did some digging and reporting, and then that gives greater details. The latest report today of ES&S vote flipping comes from Palo Pinto County, Texas, where two votes, one of them an alternative election judge, two voters, and in the other an office manager of the Palo Pinto County Democratic headquarters, they saw straight-ticket Democratic votes flipped to state straight-ticket Republican votes, two times in the instance of the first person and three times for the alternate election judge. The report is a doozy. At least two Palo Pinto County residents say they experienced early voting problems when their touchscreen voting machines they used kept switching their straight party vote from Democrat to Republican. Goes into details. We've cautioned many times here at the Brad Blog of the dangers of voting straight party tickets, particularly in Texas, where election officials have reportedly been giving disinformation to voters, but everywhere else that they allow it as well. Vote for each candidate, not straight party. But whether it's a straight party vote or not, no voter should ever cast a vote on a touchscreen machine unless they're forced to. There's absolutely no way that any vote ever cast on a touchscreen machine, with or without a so-called paper trail, can ever be shown to as having been recorded accurately. None. Zero. Scientifically impossible. Or if it isn't a scientific impossibility, are many months of asking for evidence from anyone of such a vote having been accurately recorded by a touchscreen DRE has yielded precisely no such evidence, and we've asked voting machine companies, election officials, and so-called election experts time and again, and none have been able to offer any such evidence, ever. So what do you do about it when your vote flips, other than demanding a paper ballot and demanding these machines be confiscated and quarantined immediately? The article goes on to note a very good point. One of the ladies told me these machines don't work well, and these machines give us problems. I told her I not only didn't want to use that machine, indicating the problematic first machine, I didn't want anyone using that machine. Yesterday, election integrity experts Emily Levy from Velvet Revolution's Us and Kevin Zeese from TrueVote.us suggested that when this problem occurs, voters should first tell officials and ask them to remove the machine from service. Then, alert everyone else in line waiting to vote which machine caused the problem and warn everyone else not to use it. These are among the steps recommended, with which I strongly concur. Call poll supervisors to observe the problem. Fill out a problem report. Refuse to vote on that machine. Request that the machine be taken out of service. Get a serial number of the machine if possible. Yeah, this may be unlikely in some cases. Tell other voters not to vote on that machine. Call county, town, election officials. Call local reporters. Call voter problem hotlines. And then it gives two of them, 866-MY-VOTE-1 and 866-R-VOTE. Contact bloggers and election integrity websites. Raise holy hell. Also, before you go to vote, bring a video camera, a cell phone video camera will do, to document the vote flipping when you vote, and then upload it to videothevote.org and YouTube, etc. Unfortunately, this one woman wasn't the only one that had the same problem. Okay, that it's repeating that these two women both had problems voting in Texas. One woman recognized her election trainer who had helped to monitor the polls, who was helping to monitor the polls, and called him over. We went back through the process and did it again, she said of the third time the touchscreen machine suggested she vote Republican. This has got to stop. Paging Barack Obama, the Democratic National Committee, and the thousands of attorneys we've been told for months that they have on the ground ready to move in as soon as any problems are reported. Are your pagers not on yet? What are you waiting for? Concession day on November 5th? Oh, and this just in from an election integrity advocate in swing state Missouri. Hi, Brad. Just wanted to let you know that Missourians for Honest Elections is in the process of confirming five separate reports of vote flipping from Democrat to Republican on the iVotronic machines that are the only means the Board of Elections is providing for in-person absentee voting at its headquarters in Maplewood, St. Louis County, Missouri. We'll try to offer more details on the problem in Missouri when we get them. No doubt thousands of Obama DNC attorneys are on their way. That was from Bradblog. Okay, my commentary for today, October 29th, as I drop a piece of paper on the floor. Rabble-rousing shows are now archived and can be heard at your convenience 24/7. Tell your friends to go to KVMR homepage. Then in the right-hand column, click on Program Schedule. Then click on Program Page for Rabble-rousing with Chamberlain. His past shows will be listed there. Well, I've had it for reportage on the elections. As I've stated before, the past two presidential elections, the presidential election is more a test of the honesty of our system than an indication of the will of the people. The GOP needed their Supreme Court to steal the 2000 election and chicanery in Ohio to steal 2004. In a week, we'll see if they manage to steal this one. My personal opinion, if we had honest elections, Obama would win in a landslide. Okay, I lied. One item. Remember our brave troops fighting over in the Middle East? Stateside Americans in favor of the war drive around with magnetic support the troop bumper stickers on their cars. Since those troops may die or be grievously wounded in their misguided service to country, one would suppose their right to vote would be sacred. One would be wrong. It's been reported before that many service personnel have been cheated out of receiving their absentee ballots by the clever mechanism of voting registrars sending ballots to last known stateside addresses. And when the ballots come back, not at this address because the troops are off at war, well now, what have we here? Another fraudulent registration, so cancel it. One more brave trooper loses their right to vote. But for those of our troops who manage to survive this hurdle and actually receive their absentee ballots, vote on them, and send them back to be counted, Travis T. Hipp has reported that of the absentee ballots sent back from our brave troops in Afghanistan, due to various technicalities, fully one half will not be counted. Yes, boys and girls in the military, you can all die for your country, but half of you can't vote. One has to wonder that after extending their service 2 and 3 times beyond what they signed up for, while cutting their veterans' benefits and providing them with shoddy medical care stateside, that the Bush administration just might fear how these troops will vote. Next item. In news that confounds the media experts, in spite of all the economic turmoil and stock market uncertainties, crude oil prices on the international market are dropping. And more amazing still, our gas prices at the pump are dropping. The dollar's down, gold is down, stock markets around the world are tanking, and yet our gas prices are going down. Please note that whenever anything bad happens in oil production, like a hurricane hits an oil production area, or a refinery goes offline for maintenance, the response is immediate. Prices at the pump immediately rise. But when production is increased, for whatever reason, prices respond very slowly, if at all. Yet now, OPEC is selling oil at bargain basement prices, and the alleged result is shown immediately at American gas pumps. So how can we explain this curious phenomena? A logical question to ask, and perhaps a challenge to my hypotheses, might be as follows. Okay, wise guy, since you're implying that crude oil prices are rigged, just how do the fat cats actually rig the price of crude oil? The answer is remarkably simple. The price of crude has nothing to do with production, or supply and demand, or anything logical at all. It has everything to do with speculation on oil price futures. The guys who determine the price of crude are not the producers, but the speculators. And they're not even in the oil business. They're in the gambling business. Their whitewashed title is stock market speculators. But in reality, they're simply the modern version of the Wild West card shark. Our energy prices are determined by gamblers. Back to gas prices at the pump. This, of course, presupposes that the price we pay at the pump actually bears some relation to the price the oil refiners have paid for their crude. But since there's no government regulation or oversight on the oil refiners, they're free to charge whatever they want. And their record profits this past year may give the discerning citizens some idea of what they're doing. The logical solution, of course, is to nationalize the oil companies, or at least apply stringent controls on their profits. But that would be socialism! And we can only have socialism for the fat cats, not for the common people. Capitalism for the common folk, socialism for the bankers and giant corporations. So back to the question, why, for the past few weeks, have prices at our gas pumps been dropping? With memories so short we can't recall that last year's prices were around $1.50 a gallon, we're delighted to hear that last night, down in Newcastle, you could buy gas for only $2.75 a gallon. What could possibly explain what is confounding corporate media pundits? What's that? You say there's an election in a week, and the oil government could very well be tossed out on its ear? Could that be the reason for the suddenly and inexplicable drop in prices at the pump? Nah, couldn't be. Stop out on gas, folks, now. If the oil boys don't manage to steal this upcoming election, as they have the past two, they're going to be pissed. They've been sucking on the public tit for 8 long years now, and they won't be happy that they just might have to earn a more honest living. Unless, of course, they're so thoroughly entrenched in power that it no longer matters to them who sits in the White House or pretends to represent us in Congress. Next item. While the economic meltdown continues to dominate our reality, American Free Press devoted most of an entire issue to various columnists pontificating on the mess. I cut out a few choice comments. Call it a collage of the outraged. How much more evidence do we need in order to realize the crisis is contrived to further reduce us to third world status? In order to make entry into the new world order attractive to Americans, it will have to look better than what we have. I find that a very interesting perspective. This one's by Ralph Forbes. He writes for Forbes magazine. I think he owns it. He is quoting investor Jim Rogers, who's the CEO of Rogers Holdings. And Rogers has some, I don't know if he has credibility. He certainly has a lot of fame, and he's very well respected, so let's say he's got credibility. He told this to CNBC Europe. Wasn't published here, of course. Quote, America's more communist than China right now. You can see that this is a welfare for the rich. It's socialism for the rich. It's just bailing out financial institutions. This is madness. It's insanity. They have more than doubled the American national debt in one weekend for a bunch of crooks and incompetents. I'm not quite sure why or anybody else should be paying for this, Rogers told Squawk Box Europe. A recession may be a good way to clean up the economy, while trying to prevent one may cost more and actually worsen the recession, Rogers said. Also, investment banks should be allowed to fail. Listen, investment banks have been going bankrupt since the beginning of time. If people make mistakes, if you bail out every investment bank that gets in trouble, that's not capitalism, it's socialism for the rich, he said. This is a big, huge mess, and neither one of them, McCain or Obama, has a clue what to do next year. It's going to be a mess. That was Ralph Forbes. Now we have an article on truckers demanding Congress cut outrageous fuel costs. On average, 40% of the cost of anything you buy, whether a loaf of bread or a house, can be attributed to transportation and the long journey from raw materials to finished product to marketplace. America's going broke because of oil, read signs attached to trucks that were demonstrating in Washington. A member of Truckers and Citizens United, or TACU, had this to say. It's about the thousands of people using the telephone to call Capitol Hill as we speak. The truckers called on Congress to rein in speculators and pursue more domestic sources of oil. Oil speculators buy future contracts to profit from price fluctuations without physically owning any oil. The truckers asked Congress to close loopholes that allow speculators to manipulate prices. The White House has threatened to veto the anti-speculation bill, claiming irrationally that there's no evidence that oil speculators are to blame for oil prices. Let me interject to say this is in spite of commentators all over the world claiming exactly that. Back to the article. Somebody's made an awful lot of money off the American people, and it wasn't you or I, said the TACU spokesman. Now another article from American Free Press. Congress weighed in on the side of those who argue that financial speculators operating in unregulated markets are behind the price fluctuations of food and oil. The House passed the Commodity Markets Transparency and Accountability Act, September 19th, in an effort to crack down on speculators who drive up the price of oil, food, and other commodities. And the chairman of that, Colin Peterson of Minnesota, sponsored the legislation. And this is his quote. If you can understand this quote, you're better than I am, but I'm going to read it to you. Commodities markets have seen significant changes in recent years. Trading volume is at record levels. Tradable products are more complex. And an unexplained lack of convergence between futures and cash prices in some contracts has called into question the effectiveness of these markets as a source of price discovery and risk management. I hope all of you understood that. By the way, President Bush said he'll veto the legislation if it ever gets that far. The measure comes on the heels of a new investigation launched by the CFTC into charges that a multinational agribusiness is using futures trading to illegally fix the price of dairy products. So the CFTC is looking into whether the Dairy Farmers of America, DFA, which controls one-third of the dairy supply for the United States, speculated on contracts in the futures market on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange with the intent of driving up prices. Okay, the next article, again from American Free Press. This is Paul Craig Roberts. In the 21st century, the U.S. economy has been kept going by debt expansion, not by real income growth. Economists have hyped U.S. productivity growth, but there's no sign that increased productivity has raised family incomes, an indication that there is a problem with the productivity statistics. With consumer overloaded with debt and the value of their most important asset, housing, falling, the American consumer will not be leading a recovery. A country that had intelligent leaders would recognize its dire straits, stop its gratuitous wars, and slash its massive military budget, which exceeds that of the rest of the world combined. But a country whose foreign policy goal is world hegemony will continue on the path to destruction until the world ceases to finance it. Most Americans, including the presidential candidates and the media, are unaware that the U.S. government today is unable to finance its day-to-day operations and must rely on foreigners to purchase its bonds. The government pays the interest to foreigners by selling more bonds, and when the bonds come due, the government redeems the bonds by selling new bonds. The day the foreigners do not buy is the day the American people and their government are brought to reality. This isn't the financial position of a superpower. So let's piggyback onto that, an article from Reuters, Dateline Beijing. A leading Chinese state newspaper said on Friday that the United States has plundered global wealth by exploiting the dollar's dominance, and the world urgently needs other currencies to take its place. The front-page commentary of the overseas edition of the People's Daily said that Asian and European countries should banish the U.S. dollar from their direct trade relations for a start, relying only on their own currencies. A meeting between Asian and European leaders, starting on Friday in Beijing, presented the perfect opportunity to begin building a new international financial order, the newspaper said. The People's Daily is the official newspaper of China's ruling Communist Party. The Chinese language overseas edition is a small circulation offshoot of the main paper. Its pronouncements do not necessarily directly voice leadership views, but the commentary, as well as recent comments, amount to a growing chorus of Chinese disdain for Washington's economic policies and global financial dominance in the wake of the credit crises. The grim reality has led people, amidst the panic, to realize that the United States has used the U.S. dollar's hegemony to plunder the world's wealth. This was said by the commentator, a professor at Shanghai's Tongji University. The commentator, Xi, who's before been strident in his criticism of the U.S., said other countries had lost vast amounts of wealth because of the financial crises, while Washington's sole concern has been protecting its own interests. The U.S. dollar is losing people's confidence. The world, acting democratically and lawfully through a global financial organization, urgently needs to change the international monetary system based on U.S. global economic leadership and U.S. dollar dominance. She suggested that all trading between Europe and Asia should be settled in euros, pounds, yen, and yuan, although he did not explain how the Chinese currency could play such a role since it's not convertible on the capital account. A two-day Asia-European meeting, ASEM, of 27 EU member states and 16 Asian countries was set to open on Friday. Though few analysts expect much in the way of concrete agreements, she said it could prove momentous. How can Europe and Asia grasp each other's hands and together confront the once-in-a-century global financial crisis sparked by the U.S.? How can they construct a new, equitable, and safe international financial order? He asked. The world is waiting for this Asian-European meeting to achieve big results in financial cooperation. So, this stuff is hitting the fan internationally. The American press, of course, is very slow to report on that, but nonetheless, it's happening. More out of American Free Press. The Federal Reserve has announced that it is giving an $85 billion loan to American International Group, AIG, the world's largest financial conglomerate, in exchange for a nearly 80% stake in the firm. The Associated Press calls it a government takeover. But as Ellen Brown, author of The Web of Debt, says, this is not real nationalization like the purchase of Fannie Mae Freddie Mac stock by the U.S. Treasury. The Federal Reserve, she points out, has the power to print the national money supply, but it's not actually a part of the U.S. government. It's a private banking corporation owned by a consortium of private banks. The private banking industry just bought the world's largest insurance company, but they use taxpayer money to do it. And also in American Free Press is an article by somebody that interesting character because he's in the news, out of the news, runs for president, never hear from him, but he's still around, and that's Lyndon LaRoche. Recently, Lyndon LaRouche, recently well known to Americans as a perennial candidate for president, was interviewed recently by his own PAC on the financial crash. This is an edited transcript of his comments. His historical comparisons are compelling. Not one penny to bail out the swindlers. The cleanup is in the hands of Hank Paulson, Secretary of the Treasury, along with Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. These fellows represent investment bankers. What has collapsed in the past several weeks is almost the entirety of what is called the investment banking community. This is ominous because if you go back to the 14th century, which is the last time that something like this happened, it was the collapse of the Lombard banking system. The leading banker who did this was the House of Bardi, and Bardi was one of the leading banks of the Lombard banking system. The failure to deal with that crisis then, by bankruptcy reorganization, resulted in the collapse of all of Europe into what was called a New Dark Age, in which half the parishes of Europe disappeared within a generation, along with one-third of the population. Now, what has collapsed in Washington today, most conspicuously, is investment bankers, who have repeated essentially the same practice that the Lombard bankers of the 14th century practiced, and we're on the edge of a global financial economic collapse comparable to what happened in Europe in the 14th century. You have a president who's not known for his brains, but is who has assigned Hank Paulson and other people in the community, the investment banking community, the equivalent of the Lombard bankers of the 14th century today, and put them in charge of rescuing their banking system, not ours. We, in recent years, repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. That act says we separate banking from fantasy, and fantasy is investment banking, especially these days. So now the banks are being taken over and gobbled up by dying or dead investment banking institutions. So we're on the edge of a dark age if we don't change the policy. The president put the foxes in charge of the chicken coop. In the Fed and Treasury, there's no wealth, no value. This is purely financial speculation. This is gambling. Where's your protection of wealth? Where do you have people employed in making things? What happened to the auto industry? What happened to all kinds of other industry? What's happening to agriculture? What kinds of employment are there? It's make work. It's exactly the way in which the House of Bardi collapsed in the 14th century. The King of England has successfully gone into debt to the House of Bardi in order to finance wars. Like the Iraq War. Then he refinanced and refinanced and refinanced, and one day he could no longer pay his debt, because they wanted the whole land, the sheep, the whole kingdom of England as a foreclosure. In the meantime, the House of Bardi had been doing the same thing all over France and every other part of the Lombard banking system of that period. It had been doing the same thing, just like today is in Europe today, is in the United States today, exactly the same procedure. This is Lyndon LaRouche. Okay, the time is 12:36. The radio station is KVMR FM, broadcasting out of Nevada City, California. Your host is Chamberlain. The name of the show is Rabble Rousing. And today I'm devoting a lot of it toward just trying to get some people's perspectives on ZMESVIN. Here's one by Ron Paul. Some of you might remember him as having unsuccessfully challenged for the Republican nomination for president, and he was shut out completely, and here's why, because he's thinking, he's got some ideas. On September 10th, 2002, I asked 35 questions regarding the war with Iraq. The war resolution passed on October 16th. Now today, as some of my colleagues try and reestablish credentials regarding spending restraint, I want to call attention to my 18th question from 6 years ago. Quote, Are we willing to bear the economic burden of a $100 billion war against Iraq, with oil prices expected to skyrocket and further rattle an already shaky American economy? How about an estimated 30-year occupation of Iraq that some have deemed necessary to build democracy there? Many scoffed at my radical predictions at the time, regarding them as hyperbole. 6 years later, I'm forced to admit that I was wrong. My radical prediction was in fact not radical enough. I warned of a draining 30-year occupation. Now politicians glibly talk about a 100-year occupation, as if it's no big deal. On cost, according to estimates from the Congressional Research Service, we've already burned through around $550 billion in Iraq, at a rate of about $2 billion per week. Economist Joseph Stiglitz's estimates are even higher, $12 billion a month. It is a total price tag quickly heading into the trillions. If we don't stop bombing and rebuilding bridges in Iraq that lead us nowhere but bankruptcy. Bridges in this country are crumbling, along with our economy, while somehow howl about earmarks. Earmarks are a drop in the bucket compared to war and occupation. Passing House Resolution 2605 to sunset authorization for the use of force in Iraq is the first step to stopping this bloody war and the consequent bleeding of our treasuries. Serious fiscal conservatives will support it, as will those who have been paying attention to foreign policy predictions and reality. That was Ron Paul, who is a very conservative person. Call him a Republican, call him a libertarian. And interesting that his ideas are similar in this regard to Barack Obama. Let's create a timetable and get the hell out of Iraq. Okay, an article by Judith Crane, and I'm not sure where it originated. She calls it "The Economy Made Simple, Stupid." Does anyone really believe that Ken Lay is dead? I think he's babysitting the 100,000 acres the Bush family bought in Paraguay, atop the largest aquifer in the world. As we speak, I'm sure that ExxonMobil and Shell are sponsoring the construction there of a huge estate for the Bush family to be ready for occupancy in early 2009. Water is the new oil, you know. And there's no extradition treaty with Paraguay. I've long said that we will have equality between the sexes when women have the same right to be mediocre that men do. And now, there's Sarah Palin to move the goalposts for equality. If you're going to vote for McCain, please don't tell me, because I'll have to smack the stupid out of you. I'm pissed. By re-regulating corporations to favor themselves instead of us, we got the supposedly free market that Reagan, Bush Sr., and even Clinton were screeching for. But George Bush and his crime family have taken it to new lows. Former Senator Phil Graham, McCain's economic advisor, is single-handedly responsible for the Enron loophole that oil speculators continue to use to gouge each and every one of us. Republicans refused to close it in the last session of Congress. Are you pissed? Now we own Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Lehman Brothers is kaput. Bear Stearns was taken down by a bunch of greedy bastards that drove the stock into the toilet with a massive short sell of their stock. Merrill Lynch was taken over by Bank of America. We have the bailout of AIG, who used $400,000 of my money to get massages, soak in mud, and eat lousy spa food. That should piss us all off. Let's not forget a $12 billion oil profit for one quarter for one company who drills on U.S. land, refines oil in the U.S., then sells it on world markets, gets a U.S. tax break and a U.S. taxpayer-paid subsidy while paying no royalties to us for recovering oil in our own country. And McCain wants to give them further tax breaks. I don't understand why he has any votes at all. Free market? Free market until corporate greed and no regulations upset the cart, and now they're begging for socialism in the form of a taxpayer bailout. Remember when companies trembled about an SEC investigation? Whoa, not anymore. Now the SEC merely gives suggestions. Government interference, bad. Greed, good, said Gordon Gekko, but that was when Michael Douglas was cute, sexy, and looked like he hadn't yet had a botched facelift. Now the same greedy bastards that got us into this mess are heading up the restructuring of AIG, our consultants for the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac leadership. And it's Henry Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, the man who drew Goldman Sachs into its present bind, is going to decide who to bail out first. Henry Paulson, who has options on 494,054 vested shares of their common stock. Do you think he'll buy them at bargain basement prices or wait until the stock stabilizes? I'm taking bets. Let's bring this down to realistic terms. I ask you, would you let a 7-year-old have an unsupervised overnight at the Hershey factory? Would you give the average man unlimited access to a remote control for a 70-inch HD TV with a subscription to every sports and porn channel over the spectrum? Would you give your Black American Express card to a woman and lock her in Neiman Marcus for the weekend? I rest my case. That was Judith Crane, and I'm not sure she was where it was published. Okay, here's one from the Sacramento Bee. It's front lines. McCain might have played the maverick to popular effect, calling for the outright rejection of a taxpayer-funded bailout for Wall Street's banksters. Instead, he offered up the same plan, funded by a $7 billion tax cut for investment banks. Could it have anything to do with the fact that McCain's top five campaign donors are the investment banks Merrill Lynch, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, collectively, who collectively donated more than $1 million this election cycle? You make the call. That absence of Democratic presidential candidate contender Senator Barack Obama from the debate has been even more conspicuous. Besides mumble a few platitudes about the necessity for oversight, Obama contributed nothing of significance to the congressional debate, and no wonder. Three of this candidate's top five campaign donors are major investment banks, the ubiquitous Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. Together, they've contributed $1.5 million to Obama. Surely the leaders of the democratically controlled House would heed the will of the people, so vigorously stated in the blitzkrieg of emails that have bombarded the nation's capital. No such luck. No one pushed harder for the bailout than California Representative Nancy Pelosi. You guessed it. Three of her top 11 donors in 2008 include investment banks Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. This was written a week or so ago. As this is being written, Congress is regrouping for another go of the bailout bill. With so many elected representatives apparently on the take, the outcome might appear to be inevitable. But not so fast. An increasing number of Americans, Democrats and Republicans, are rising from their slumber. Politicians who choose to ignore this awakening do so at their own peril. My comment. Well, let's hope so, because since this was written, of course, that bailout bill was passed. Next article is by Michael Winship, writing in Truth Out Perspective. truthout.org, for whom the bailout tolls. During the stock market crash in 1929, that curtain-raising overture to the Great Depression, stories abounded of Wall Street brokers rushing to their office windows and leaping to their deaths. But according to the late John Kenneth Galbraith and other economic historians, those accounts of suicide were by and large fairy tales. Perhaps they were more dark-hearted, wishful thinking than reality revenge fantasies on the part of those whose real-life savings had been wiped out by ravenous speculators. Nonetheless, the myth of those fatal plunges, like so many urban legends, is hard to shake. With more than a drop of cold blood, some have asked why, during the current fiscal crisis, we haven't seen similar tragedies in the ranks of high finance. A close look at the recent government bailout may explain why. The fat cats at the top had nothing to worry their pretty little whiskers about. Not only have most of their businesses been saved, for now at least, but they've already been pretty successful at protecting their high-rolling lifestyles and finding bailout loopholes that allow them to keep hauling in the big bucks. To that ancient business axiom, buy low, sell high, add this amendment. When you get into trouble, beg for a bailout. Then, new money in hand, continue to act with the rapacious greed of Caligula or the Sun King. You may already have heard how AIG, the insurance giant, after being saved to the tune of $85 billion, threw a $440,000 shindig at a California spa and then blew another $86,000 on a hunting trip to the English countryside, picking off partridge, just as they were asking the feds for an additional $38 billion. Bit of a sticky wicket, that. Caught red-handed, AIG canceled plans for another 160 sales and promotion events that would have cost a cool $80 million. And, get this, agreed to stop spending millions of their newly gained tax dollars on lobbying efforts against increased government regulations. This after being rescued from extinction by that very same government. Talk about biting the hand that feeds you. New York State Attorney General Andrew Cuomo is demanding that AIG get back from its execs millions of dollars the insurer paid out as the company neared collapse, And on Wednesday, the insurance giant agreed to freeze $600 million worth of deferred compensation and bonuses for its top brass. Did you get that? $600 million worth of deferred compensation and bonuses for its top brass, who got them into the mess they were in. Back to the article. There are clawback provisions in the big $7 billion bailout passed by Congress 3 weeks ago, requiring that financial institutions get money back from their senior executives if the payments were based on statements of earnings gains or other criteria that are later proved to be materially inaccurate. But the executive pay limits and the legislation apparently have so many loopholes you could fly a fleet of Gulfstream corporate jets through them. Oregon Congressman Peter DeFazio caught at least seven. Quote, that will protect their outrageous paychecks and golden parachutes, quote, he wrote fellow Democratic House members, adding, imagine how many more loopholes the Wall Street lawyers will find. No doubt the nine banks into which the U.S. is planning to inject billions in capital, again all taxpayer dollars, have their lawyers searching for those escape hatches. Writing in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, Sarah Anderson and Sam Pizzagatti of the Institute for Policy Studies calculated that last year the CEOs of those nine banks took home on average $32 million each, nearly triple the average CEO pay of the 500 biggest U.S. companies. This is more than $600,000 a week apiece. Bloomberg News columnist Jonathan Weil figures that since the start of fiscal year 2000, the once mighty five of Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, Lehman Brothers, and Bear Stearns, lost around $83 billion in stock market value. But they reported employee compensation of around $239 billion. In other words, the engineers who dug this disastrous hole paid themselves almost $3 for every dollar they lost. The cost to the taxpayer of all the bailouts, as calculated by the Internet Investigative Newsroom, ProPublica.org, is a whopping $8,750 per household, more than 2.5 times what lucky us got to fork over 20 years ago during the savings and loan crises. Oh, by the way, you might contrast that $8,750 with the kickback, the tax rebate that you got from King George. $600, was it? But the masters of the universe are just fine, thank you, in no small part due to the tolerance and largesse of their guru, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, late of Goldman Sachs, where Forbes magazine reports that during a 32-year career, he accumulated more than $700 million. He said limiting compensation too punitively might prevent some institutions from participating in his plan to save the economy. Now the people suffering are the nearly 800,000 out of work so far this year. More families with children are homeless. Delinquencies and foreclosures are at their highest in nearly three decades, and the LA Times reported earlier this month that worries about home foreclosures, job losses, and plunging stock prices have sparked a surge in mental health problems. There's some happier stories. Tom Dart, the sheriff of Cook County, Illinois, suspended all foreclosure evictions because they were throwing into the streets tenants of buildings who had nothing to do with their landlord's inability to make payments. Testifying before the House Budget Committee this week, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke agreed that homeowners in jeopardy of foreclosure need help. Quote, I agree that stopping preventable foreclosures is extremely important, he said. I hope we continue to look for ways to do that. But so far, the government and the businesses bailed out haven't looked very hard. They've done little or nothing, and it's every man for himself, devil take the hindmost. In his History of the 29 Market Crash, John Kenneth Galbraith wrote, quote, the sense of responsibility in the financial community, for the community as a whole, is not small, it's nearly nil. In other words, virtually non-existent, somewhat around zero. In other words, my fellow Americans, look out below. Do not ask for whom the bailout tolls. It tolls for thee. That was Michael Winship writing in truthout.org. Next one's called Dictatorship Replaces Democracy While Americans Slumber. It's by John Faulkner writing in Smirking Chimp. The Bush administration, with its Republican Congress and later with its compliant Democratic Congress, has been quietly undermining the Constitution. The laws that Congress has enacted have been designed to deny Americans their most basic rights. These dictatorial powers will be necessary if and when Americans awake from the slumber and realize what's done to them. It's an old story. Congress and Bush are perfectly aware that civil unrest is a very real possibility if Americans ever figure out that the craze to deregulate the financial industry signifies the abandonment of American citizens by their elected representatives. The result of deregulation was obvious when the S&Ls crashed and taxpayers were called upon to ante up for the costs of reckless lending and bad investments. When California deregulated the Public Utilities Commission, Enron and a few other energy companies took Californians on a $90-plus billion ride. Today, there's so many slow learners that many millions will vote for McCain-Palin, even though McCain has been a deregulation adherent for his entire political career. This is his viewpoint of deregulation. Quote, "Opening up the health insurance market to more vigorous nationwide competition, as we have done over the last decade in banking, would provide more choices of innovative product, less burdened by the worst excesses of state-based regulation." Close quote. The senator would like to do for health care what was done for the market. Have Congress and Bush been entertaining some anxieties about how U.S. citizens may react when they learn the U.S. Treasury has been sacked and the full force of their government's pro-corporate deregulatory mania is known and felt? A little-known provision slipped in with the new Department of Homeland Security is called Installation, Civilian Inmate Labor Camps. It's a terrifying example of Bush's vast expansion of powers, and as such is written so vaguely as to allow the broader interpretation of any disruption severely affecting the U.S. population, infrastructure, environment, economy, or government functions. If that insult wasn't enough, Bush, for additional emphasis, slapped every American hard across the face when the contract for building detention facilities was assigned to Cheney's old company, Kellogg Brown & Root. Let me stop for a second. Let's go back here. They can put people in inmate labor camps for any disruption severely affecting the U.S. population, infrastructure, environment, economy, or government functions. That means, quite simply, that if you go out in the streets and protest all of this, you're interrupting government functions. You can get thrown in an internment camp. Okay, we've got a caller. I'll interrupt here. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Yeah, is this Chamba?
You're live on KVMR.
Oh, okay, Chamba. I was calling about the drop in oil prices, and
right.
I wanted to let you know that Lindsay Williams, who can be found on the internet, YouTube,
right,
predicted last June,
right,
that oil would come down to $50 a barrel,
right,
but it was for political reasons. It was to basically destroy the Middle East economies, which all rely on oil for their foreign exchange, currency exchange,
right,
and
yeah.
Then it was also to disrupt or to destroy the American dollar because of all the investments that these Middle East countries have,
mm-hmm,
in the American dollar.
Okay.
So
yeah,
if people want to try and find Lindsay Williams on YouTube, see what he has to say, that would be...
Yeah, he's an interesting character. He's the one that was
he was a
chaplain up in Alaska.
Yes,
and
he was a Baptist minister to the workers up in Alaska, and he gained the confidence of the executive staff, and he was allowed to function as a liaison executive between labor and management, and as a result, sat in on all their board meetings and learned how the whole thing goes.
Okay, so if you can contact him, I'd love to have him on my show.
I'll see what I can do.
There you go. Thanks.
Hey, thanks.
Have a great day. Okay, I'm sorry we're out of time. Listeners should know by now that if you wait until the last minute to call in, I can't get to you. I apologize for that. You need to phone in sooner than the very end of the show. Okay, we're out of time. No chance to get into humor. There is an election next week. Vote. Things are important this year. Vote. And I would advise going into your election place early, just in case there's a mess up in your registration or something, you have an opportunity to do something about that. Thanks very much for listening. We had a pledge drive last week, and to anybody that contributed any amount whatsoever, thank you very, very much. Everyone at KVMR appreciates that. Your fellow listeners appreciate that. That's what helps keep us on the air and helps keep shows like this going. So thanks again.